It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. After President Trump's press conference with Russian President Vladimir Putin, Charlie Sykes renewed his call for Republicans in Congress to repudiate the president. Seeming to side with the president of a country that has attacked us was a bridge too far for Sykes. The former conservative talk radio host and author of How the Right Lost Its Mind penned two op-eds, one for The Guardian and one for The New York Times, calling for action and despairing at how conservatism has been co-opted by Trump's base. Charlie Sykes recently wrote these opinion pieces. He says he doesn't see Trump's leadership. He doesn't see conservatism in Trump's leadership. We're taking your calls here. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Charlie Sykes, welcome to the Morning Show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to start with some news here. A new poll out this morning shows Americans don't think President Trump has been tough enough on Russia. NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll shows nearly two-thirds of people say that, and it wasn't just Democrats. 47% of Republicans surveyed said Trump hasn't been tough enough on Russia. Do you see some hope in this poll?
Well, I mean, there's a reality check. I think the whole world watched what happened in Helsinki, where the president of the United States stood next to Vladimir Putin and was given a chance to really hold the Russians accountable for their behavior, for what they've done with the American elections, with what they're doing in Syria, Ukraine, Crimea, and chose not to do that. So, yes, I mean, obviously that had an impact. Now, look, there's a distinction between some of the policies that the Trump administration has enacted. But I think that the president's rhetoric and his obsequiousness to Vladimir Putin kind of drowned out a lot of that.
So, distinction. What are these? What are some of the policies that you want to make that distinction about?
Well, I think that the administration, separate from Donald Trump, it's almost as if there's a little bit of schizophrenia. They have imposed sanctions on the Russians. We have taken actions against some of the Russian consulates, but. I do think that the president's unwillingness and inability to call out Vladimir Putin or to take a stronger rhetorical stand really is what people ought to be reacting to.
So the sanction is against the Russians. Didn't that come from Congress? That didn't come from the administration, right?
No, and that is fair. Almost everything he's done, I think, has been done reluctantly by Donald Trump. There are people within the administration who have been willing to call out the Russians. Dan Coats, for example, you know, the director of National Intelligence. Congress basically dared the president to veto their sanctions, and he backed down.
Researchers conducted this poll after the summit. Before the summit happened, what did you expect from this meeting?
What do I expect from the summit?
Well, which was only a week ago, by the way.
Right.
No, it feels like ages ago.
I think I've said that I think our politics are being lived out in dog years because everything seems so long ago.
Right.
Look, I expected that a president who claims to put America first would not blame America first. I really thought that. I had low expectations, to be honest. They were not exceeded. I would hope that the president of the United States would have, you know, looked at Vladimir Putin and said, look, you cannot interfere in American elections. You cannot undermine our democracy, and you will be held accountable for that. And he was unable to say that.
What was your reaction when you heard him say that he believed Vladimir Putin over our U.S. intelligence officials?
Well, you know, like I think a lot of Americans, I was appalled by this. It's unprecedented. There's no moment in American history where you can find an American president who essentially sides with an autocratic, thuggish dictator over his own government on a stage that large. There is just simply no parallel to that. Obviously, there's something going on with Donald Trump in terms of his admiration, his bromance with authoritarians like Vladimir Putin or Erdogan or, you know, the other authoritarian leaders around the world.
Erdogan of Turkey.
But you would think that given the opportunity to stand up for his own country in that setting, that he would have taken it. So Let's put this as, you know, chapter 898 in things that Donald Trump has done that are, you know, perhaps not surprising, but still genuinely shocking.
So a lot of the things that Donald Trump has done have not dissuaded his supporters. He still has a large amount of support among his base. Is it possible that it didn't occur to him that this might affect his supporters? Do people in this country outside of Washington, D.C., outside of like the major centers and the news media, do they really care about Russia?
Well, that's an interesting question. We'll have to see over time whether this undermines any of his support. I mean, his base, I think, and this is not original, seems absolutely unshakable. I mean, this was one of those moments where, you know, he stood on Fifth Avenue and shot somebody, and his base still stuck with him. But on the other hand, what you saw there was weakness. And if the Trump brand is, I am strong, I will fight for you, I will put America first, that is not what you saw in Helsinki. So it cut against all of that. You know, he's supposed to be the man on the white horse who alone can solve all of our problems. And yet, you know, he looked like Vladimir Putin's caddy. And you wonder whether people are going, well, why didn't he stand up? The schoolyard bully encounters the bigger bully. And what does he do? So but I'm not sure that you're actually seeing much of that movement. And I think part of it is that the our politics has become so tribalized. That I do think a lot of voters have just sort of tuned out. They tune out the ups and the downs, the details, because they're all in for their guy, or they're all in opposition to that guy.
We are talking to Charlie Sykes, who is calling on congressional Republicans to stand up to Donald Trump. We're also taking your calls on this. What is conservatism to you? Does it align with today's Republican Party? And do you see your values showing up in this party or other parties? Give us your perspective, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. So, Charlie Sykes, you wrote something in the New York Times that kind of prescribed what you wanted Congress to do to stand up to President Trump. Tell me what you think Congress needs to do.
Well, first of all, I mean, you know, enough with the angry tweets and the public statements. The Constitution endows Congress with vast powers. They are not constitutional potted plants. The framers of the Constitution wrote in congressional power in Article 1 of the Constitution. And yet Republicans, of course, have been reluctant not just to criticize Donald Trump, but to also reassert their constitutional authority. And so, I ran through some of the things they could do that were substantive. One of the things they could certainly do is pass the resolution proposed by Jeff Flake and Chris Coons, Democrat and Republican bipartisan, that would reassert the support of Congress for our intelligence agencies and making it clear that we would hold the Russians accountable. I thought that it was a good idea. The editors of the Weekly Standard, and I work with them, called for Congress to censure the president for his comments. But more substantively, look, they can pass legislation, once again, triggering sanctions, more sanctions, if there is additional Russian hacking. We're seeing the fallout from the trade war that Donald Trump is launching unilaterally. Congress could go back and say, look, the president should not be able to unilaterally impose taxes on the American people. He should get congressional approval. The power to tax is clearly given to Congress. I think they need to pass legislation that will make it harder for the president to fire Bob Mueller to protect this investigation into the Russian interference. And there are a lot of other things that they can do. And I guess part of it is, look, you members of the Senate, there's a long history of leaders of the United States Senate who have had tremendous impact. Bob Corker has been willing to rhetorically push back on Donald Trump, but is he willing to do anything? He's the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. This is the position held by people like Henry Cabot Lodge, Arthur Vandenberg, Frank Church, William Fulbright, who use that position and its incredible influence and power to be able to put pressure on the administration. I would hope that he would hold very, very in-depth hearings into what the Russians have done.
So Bob Corker is not running for re-election. Why isn't he doing this?
Well, that's one of the great mysteries of American politics, I think, in part because Mitch McConnell is refusing to allow votes on things like, for example, congressional control over the tariffs. But, you know, stay tuned. Maybe Bob Corker will, in fact, you know, hold these hearings and, you know, answering questions like what did the president agree to in Helsinki? You know, at this moment right now, no one in this country really knows what the president of the United States agreed to in those private meetings. We really don't even know what happened in Singapore. This is the role of Congress.
Singapore with Kim Jong-un. The Singapore meeting with Kim Jong-un, not Vladimir Putin. So here, my question though is that I think that there are a lot of Republicans who, because Trump's base is so supportive of him, who are afraid to go against him lest they lose their seat. Is that something that you think Republicans are just going to have to take on the chin for a cycle or two, or do you think that if they do stand up, they won't lose their seats?
Well, I think there's no question about it that there's a risk. You're exactly right that, look, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why Republicans won't take on Donald Trump. There's the tribalism that I mentioned before. There's the transactionalism, which is they're getting things from him that they want. I mean, they get the tax cuts. They're getting the conservative judges from him. So the transactionalism is important. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, there is the simple timidity that because the Trump base is so aggressively pro-Trump, they risk having primary challenges. And look, Jeff Flake's political career is over. Bob Corker is retiring. You had South Carolina Congressman Mark Sanford, who was defeated in a primary after he criticized Donald Trump. So there's some real risk. On the other hand, there are some folks there who, as you point out, are retiring, are not facing the voters. And then plus there's just the question of, like, what is the point of being there if you are not going to fulfill your constitutional responsibilities?
After the summit, the Putin summit the other day, there were some Republicans who at least came out and said, "No, we support our intelligence communities." Paul Ryan seemed kind of uneasy when he was talking about Trump's decision to invite Putin to Washington. We have some tape on that, I think. Maybe we don't have some tape on that. We were supposed to have some tape on that. But he said he would certainly not invite Putin to address Congress. But he didn't specifically say, "I don't think Putin should come to Washington for a summit."
Well, you know, look, Paul Ryan is also has incredible power as Speaker of the House of Representatives to take action. One of the things he could certainly do is call off the lapdogs, the folks in the House Intelligence Committee, who basically have decided that their role is to obstruct and undermine the Mueller investigation into Russian interference. Mm. This is something that Paul Ryan can do. I mean, this came about a week after that incredible circus that we saw where members of the House were, you know, beating up on an FBI agent about his texts. And by the way, you know, obviously there are some legitimate issues to be raised there, but The question is, what are House Republicans doing about this, as opposed to what they are saying about this? Because the attacks on this country are ongoing. Vladimir Putin is picking up on the signals. What can he do? What can he get away with? Mm. And he's not going to be dissuaded by sound bites from Paul Ryan. He might be dissuaded if you saw a strong, more of a spine from the House of Representatives in the United States Senate, saying, you know, we are not going to tolerate this behavior, and here's the legislation that we will pass if, in fact, you don't clean up your act.
We are taking your calls for Charlie Sykes this morning, 800-642-1234. Do you think that Trump represents you? Do you think that conservatism has changed? And do you think that your congressional representatives need to stand up? Jimmy from Valley Junction, welcome to the program.
Morning. Yeah, I voted. I've been voting since 1976, and I voted Republican for president until the second George W. Bush administration, when I had my fill of the Iraq thing. And I just don't know if I can go back to voting Republican. It's just the party is used to be conservative, fiscally conservative, worried about money now. Deficits don't matter. Huge tax cuts without paying for them. And now this thing with the tariffs and with the trying to bribe the farmers now with some money to support them while this thing goes on. I wouldn't be surprised if the House is taken back by Democrats that Trump starts working with them because he's not a conservative. He's an opportunist.
That's interesting, Jimmy. So one of the things that Jimmy was talking about was the tariffs that Trump has imposed. And then yesterday it was announced that that the Trump administration plans to give $12 billion to American farmers who are hurt by the tariffs. I thought that was an interesting way that Jimmy characterized that, though. And also, our Senator Ron Johnson, who you are friends with, he responded by saying that this is becoming more and more like a Soviet type of economy. And he added that he was really exasperated. So it sounds like he is starting to push back.
Well, yes. And that was a very, very interesting quote from Senator Johnson. The question is whether they're going to do anything about it. No, the caller is right, and he's identified a number of points. Look, there's no question about it. There are a lot of conservatives who are completely happy with Donald Trump because of the judges, because of the immigration policy. But the reality is that conservatism under Donald Trump, I think I said yesterday on a television show, it has become dumber, crueler, more disconnected from reality, more dishonest and more extreme. And the willingness to jettison many conservative principles, fiscal conservatism being one of them, a concern for personal character being something else. And, of course, the tariffs, which are, in fact, massive tax increases on the American consumer. These are not conservative. And the fact that now he's trying to fix this up by coming up with various forms of corporate welfare ought to alarm conservatives. I mean, it's an example of. And I think the caller referred to Donald Trump as an opportunist. Donald Trump is a man who has no deeply held beliefs, and conservatives are willing to bank some of their wins. But my question is, at what price? How much are you willing to give up in order to get these wins? And so far, the Republican Party has been willing to give up an awful, awful lot.
At what price? We're going to explore that a little bit more with Charlie Sykes in a moment. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking with Charlie Sykes this morning about President Trump and his call for Republicans in Congress, Sykes's call for Republicans in Congress to stand up and take charge of what he sees is a dangerous path. There's Trump's embrace of Vladimir Putin, his meeting with Kim Jong-un, his disdain for our European allies, and the erosion of trust in this country between citizens and the media. Do you think that Congress should stand up to President Trump? What do you think of Paul Ryan's silence? He's not running for re-election, so why isn't he speaking out? 800-642-1234 is the number that you can call. You can also email at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. And I want to start with this, Charlie Sykes. What I just said about Paul Ryan's silence, you've known Paul Ryan for a long time. You've interviewed him many times. Why do you think that he is being equivocal on this?
Well, it's even more extraordinary because, of course, he is not running for re-election. This would be a perfect example, a perfect moment for him to reassert the fact that, okay, Donald Trump may be the president, but there is a different Republican Party out there, but apparently there's not. I think in part it's because of, going back to what we talked about before, the Trumpian base is unmovable. It is still with Donald Trump. And the vast majority of members of the Republican House Conference, the people who elect him as Speaker, represent districts where Donald Trump is very popular. Donald Trump may be underwater with the general electorate, but in those districts that are represented by Republican congressmen, he still has strong support. So maybe, you know, 80% of the members of the Republican Congress, House of Representatives, you know, represent strong Trump districts. That's a political problem for Paul Ryan. I would argue that, look, if you don't stand up now, when? When will you do it?
Have you argued this to him? Have you talked to him recently?
I did talk to him after he stepped down. We had a very cordial conversation. I think he has no doubt where I stand on all of this. I do understand the bargain that he has made. You know, there's an obvious sort of raw transactionalism in his thinking, which is, look, I'm going to get things that I want. I'm going to get the tax cuts. I'm going to get a lot of other legislation, you know, signed by this president. But then the price of this is that I have to look the other way. He forces him put that way. I have to, you know, look the other way. I have to enable some things. I have to rationalize other things. The problem with those Faustian bargains, though, and I do think it's a Faustian bargain, is that you do get things that you want. You do get, you know, nice things, but the price turns out to be far greater than you expected. And I think that we're seeing that with this president. You know, how far are they willing to go at what price? And we keep asking, you know, what will it take for Republicans to break with Donald Trump? And I think the answer is, whatever it is, it's already happened. And they stuck with him.
Interesting. We are taking your calls, and we've got some full phone lines here. Ken from Janesville, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I think we are indeed in strange times. I mean, who would have thought that Charlie Sykes on Wisconsin Public Radio,
but right?
It goes back to what Warren Buffett said at the beginning of during the election process. No matter who got elected, the economy goes on. And I think with people that are involved in politics like Charlie, who are very close to it, Piles and that, forget is that the, maybe don't consider is that the economy is so massive now, and it's a world economy, that no matter what they do in Washington, no matter who tweets what or whatever, the economy just chugs along. And I think the average person out there, that's what they care about on a day-to-day basis. And it doesn't matter whether you want to espouse conservative principles or liberal principles or whatever, as long as we can take care of our day-to-day needs, and that continues to happen in spite of all the craziness that's going on in Washington right now. And we've come to realize that the one thing Trump was indeed right on is the swamp is a lot deeper there than any of us probably thought. No matter which side of the aisle you're on, and life just goes on.
So thank you for that, Ken. So Charlie Sykes, though, the economy just goes on, and there's really nothing Washington can do. So why do all of this stuff on tariffs, and isn't that now hurting the economy?
Well, it has a potential to hurt the economy. The news report that you just had a few minutes ago, mm-hmm. you know, showed the impact that it's having on a company like Harley-Davidson, which, by the way, has also been attacked rather viciously by the president of the United States. But the caller is right. You know, the politicians sometimes claim more credit for the economy than they deserve. I don't think that the government can create that many jobs. But the government, bad policy can derail a good economy. There's no question about it. It can hurt. And also, there are just other issues that clearly we're not addressing. This massive debt crisis that we're facing. Republicans used to claim to care about that, and now they're presiding over $1 trillion a year deficits as far as the eye can see, adding, you know, maybe $10 trillion to the national debt. That is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, that bill becomes due. One final point, though. Given how strong the economy is right now, the low unemployment rate, the stock market being as high as it is, any other president other than Donald Trump would have an approval rating in the mid-60s. The fact that Donald Trump in the latest Quinnipiac poll was under 40% with the economy this strong is really an extraordinary political moment that normally if the economy is good, the president is going to benefit. I think he is benefiting from it, but certainly historically unpopular.
We are taking your calls here for Charlie Sykes in the last few minutes. Todd from Green Bay, welcome to the program.
All right, good morning. Yeah, I got a couple of things that I disagree with Charlie on. One is I think that what's happening right now with Trump is it's the reaction to the past 8 years of Obama. That's what put him in office. That's what put Trump in office. People were looking at the path that we were going down and did not want to pursue it any further. They decided against socialism, and they saw Hillary as just 4 more years or possibly 8 more years of that, and possibly we would never recover from that. The other thing I think that Charlie mentioned is that, or someone mentioned that we've created Trump has created a distrust in the media. It's about time that we had a distrust in the media, and I think every day the media is exposing themselves for who they are, and they're doing it blatantly and openly now. There's no question what side they're on, and as you mentioned, the swamp is deeper than we thought. Well, you just had Jim Comey come out the other day and say, we have to elect Democrats, you know, people that have to be willing to sacrifice their seats in Congress to elect or to stop Brett Kavanaugh from being elected, from being approved. So I think there's a lot going on here, but I think a lot of it is just up to the public, and the people have had their say in this election. And I'm not entirely 100% on board with everything Trump does, but I think people are seeing that here's a guy who says what he says and means what he means, and they like that.
So thank you for that, Todd. So, Charlie, a reaction to Obama. I also wonder if Trump got elected simply because of a reaction to Hillary Clinton, that we were not going to elect a woman president, especially after we had our first black president. How much of that is true?
Well, there's a lot I agree with and disagree with. And by the way, just I wanted to comment on that last point that Donald Trump, you know, says what he tells it like it is type thing. I mean, people, we've had a lot of liars in American politics before, but Donald Trump's assault on the truth and his lack of credibility is historically, I think you've been demonstrated. But yes, let's go to the why Donald Trump got elected. He was clearly a reaction against a lot of other things. And I certainly understand all of that. For a lot of voters, it was a binary choice that no matter how bad Donald Trump might be, no matter what his flaws were, that Hillary Clinton and the Democrats were worse. And I think that there is this binary sense that, and part of this is the tribalism that reacts against the other side rather than for the other side. The analogy that I used back during the election was, if you're suffering from cancer, the cure is not to drink battery acid. And I think that that's what a lot of the Republicans did, which was, okay, there's a lot that you objected to here, but what is the alternative? And the alternative can, in fact, be a lot worse. The alternative, the embrace of so much of what Donald Trump represents. The comments about the media. I, of course, have for many, many years been critical of media bias, but we also have to recognize that we've gotten to this very dangerous point, and it is dangerous for democracy if, in fact, we delegitimize all fact-based media. And one of the things that I think Donald Trump has done is that he has been willing to dishonestly and demagogically attack media outlets, not just for bias, but for reporting things that are embarrassing or uncomfortable for him. That yes, let's acknowledge that the media can do a better job without rejecting truth, fact-based information, because this is dangerous. If we cannot agree on facts, if we cannot agree that there is truth, then you can't have democratic debate. There's nothing to discuss at that point. If we are willing to tolerate falsehood and lies and fake news, by fake news, I mean absolutely, actual propaganda, then we've entered into a very, very dangerous state in American society.
Okay.
So, part of it is that you can acknowledge the objections, but also say that the cure might actually be worse.
Okay, so here's you talked about actual propaganda. Trump tweeted something yesterday that a lot of people found totally confusing. He said he's very concerned that Russia will be fighting very hard to have an impact on the upcoming election. Based on the fact that no president has been tougher on Russia than me, they will be pushing very hard for the Democrats. They definitely don't want Trump. Now, Putin said in their press conference that he was pushing for Trump because Trump was going to be easier on Russia. So where does this come from, and how does he expect people to actually believe it?
All right. This is one of those classic moments. Donald Trump is a master of some things, including projection, which is that if you have been engaging in certain behavior, what you do is you accuse the other side of doing it. In the course of the people that I've interviewed, one of the most insightful interviewees that I had was Garry Kasparov, the former Russian dissident, world chess champion, mm-hmm. who said that the point of these lies and of propaganda is not to convince you of the truth or falsity of a proposition. The point of this kind of propaganda, these kinds of lies, is to make you doubt your ability to determine what is true, to attack your critical sensibility, to throw up so much dust, so much smoke, that people will go, I don't know what's true. Who do I believe? Shrug your shoulders and just go on. And I think that the part of it is designed simply to sow mass confusion. And I think this, again, is the danger that you will have people who either cannot determine what is factual and what is true, or perhaps even worse, you know, lose interest in it and go, okay, since I don't know, I'm just going to go back into my safe space in the corner of my political tribe and check out. Either way, I think it's damaging.
We have been talking to Charlie Sykes. He's a commentator and author. And, of course, he used to be a conservative talk show radio host in Milwaukee. He recently wrote opinion pieces for The New York Times and The Guardian, telling conservative Republicans that they need to stand up to President Trump. Charlie, thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's been fun.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.